Welcome, and thanks for joining us for another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today with the top news and information for farmers, agribusinesses, and all those interested in Indiana's most important industry, agriculture. Candidates for Lieutenant Governor squared off in an agricultural debate this week, and we played a big part in the event. We'll have that story in just a moment. Also on today's show, Republican Jim Baird, who sits on the House Ag Committee, joined me for a podcast recently about his hopes for a new farm bill. We'll share some of his thoughts. More today on John Deere's recent layoffs and how they plan to shift those jobs to Mexico. And the Indiana State Fair wraps up this weekend. We'll tell you about some folks receiving awards out at the fairgrounds later on in the show. Grain market analysis with Andy Eubank is on the way. It was a rough week for soybeans in particular after a bearish USDA report on Monday. And Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin has his Indiana farm forecast on the way. Right now, I want to welcome in my friend and colleague C.J. Miller. C.J., the Lieutenant Governor, is the highest elected ag official in the state of Indiana, and that's why we were proud to partner with Agri Institute, who hosted the Lieutenant Governor's debate at the Indiana State Fairgrounds Tuesday to discuss ag policy and issues impacting rural Hoosiers.
Eric, the room was packed at the Purdue Extension building at the Indiana State Fairgrounds and certainly close to capacity, which is why we live streamed the event for everyone to see. And Eric, you served as one of the panelists for the debate and posed this question for each of the candidates.
Property taxes will be the number one issue that farm organizations like Farm Bureau, the Indiana Corn Growers Association, and Indiana Soybean Alliance take into the 2025 legislative session. One, do you believe farmers are unfairly treated under the current property tax formula because their profession simply requires more land? And what do you see as a potential solution? Can you give us some details on your property tax plan?
First to answer the question was Micah Beckwith, the Republican candidate for Lieutenant Governor, who said that farmers are indeed unfairly targeted by the state's property taxes.
Farmers have seen an increase from last year to this year, 26.2% increase in property taxes. That's insane. That's absolutely out of control. And farmers need the relief. The Braun Beckwith plan is going to bring that relief to farmers. We're going to make sure that they have, that never again will you ever be able to outpace economic growth of an area.
Beckwith laid out the plan from Republican gubernatorial candidate Mike Braun.
3% is going to be the cap. It can't grow 26% in a year. We're going to grow with economic stability. We're going to make sure that farmers are not seeing these wide swaths of just huge jumps in their property taxes.
Terry Gooden, who is the Democrat candidate for Lieutenant Governor, said the solution for Indiana's property taxes isn't just a quick fix.
It's easy for state politicians to stand up and say, well, we're going to cut your property taxes. We're going to lower your property taxes. Guess what? Property taxes are 100% local. It's easy for those folks to say that. What they need to say is we're going to quit making cuts to your property tax until we find out what we can do to lower your property taxes, and that is through growth.
Although Gooden didn't give any specifics, he said that he and Democrat gubernatorial candidate Jennifer McCormick would put together a plan to tackle the property tax issue.
We're going to present opportunities in rural communities where they can grow and they can grow themselves out of these property tax crisis that we're in. We've got crisis after crisis here that's been created by one-party rule in the last 20 years.
Meanwhile, Tanya Hudson, the Libertarian candidate for Lieutenant Governor, said her party's plan is to abolish Indiana's property taxes altogether.
Because you should not be paying property taxes on a home that you already own. Whether you're a farmer or a senior citizen living on Social Security and barely making ends meet and your property taxes go up and you can't pay them. And then we have this mafia-style tactic where through sheriff's sale or whatever, if you can't pay your property taxes, you get kicked out of the home that you own. We should not be doing that.
Hudson described how Libertarian gubernatorial candidate Donald Rainwater's plan would make up for that lost revenue.
Instead of property taxes, when you buy a home, you pay a 7% sales tax. If you can't afford the 7% at closing, you can pay 1% a year for 7 years. The communities, local communities, we get together, the municipalities, and to work out what is the budget, how can we pay our fire and police.
You can watch the replay of the Lieutenant Governor's debate on our website, HoosierAgToday.com, or on our mobile app. Just search Hoosier Ag Today in your respective app store. Eric.
Thanks, CJ. Now, if folks go back and watch that replay, it will be well worth their time. A lot of ground was covered, not just property taxes. We covered water, both quality and quantity, speaking specifically to the LEAP project in Boone County and how the Indiana Economic Development Corporation might operate under their administration should they be elected. But the property tax debate was obviously the hot topic, and it did get a little testy at times.
Yes, it did. And Terry Gooden used a particular phrase to say that, well, Mike Braun's property tax plan just won't work.
The plan that was presented by Micah and his partner was a plan that was put together, knee-jerk reaction, all right? It was put together quickly. They did not take into account, unless there was some covert reason, that they wanted to defund police, they wanted to defund fire departments, they wanted to defund ambulance services, and they wanted to cut funding to our local schools. Hopefully, that was not the purpose of that property tax plan.
But Micah Beckwith came back with this quick little zinger at Terry Gooden and the Democrats.
Last time I checked, the Democrat Party is the party of defund the police, not the Republican Party. And we will make sure that you have all of the money necessary to carry out the duties of local government.
And what's interesting is that Beckwith slammed the McCormick-Gooden campaign for not even having a property tax plan at the time of the debate on Tuesday. They did announce their plan on Thursday.
Thank you, CJ, for the story and for your camera work on the live stream. I also need to say thank you to former HAT intern Jordan Wickard for her help and to the folks at the Indiana State Fair for their hospitality. It was a great event. Again, please go back and watch the replay. A lot to unpack there. Also want to say thank you to Andy Eubank. He was at the controls for the live stream, and he's here now with a look at the grain markets. Andy?
Which camera do you want me to look into here, Eric? Oh, just microphones. Got it. Soybeans weak to end the week, and corn followed in a lower day for those markets all day. Market analysis to begin with, I grabbed that from Brian Basting, Advanced Trading, in the middle of the trading session. All in all, a negative day, and as far as the grains and oil seeds, we can point to some helpful rains probably for at least a part of that negativity.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Andy. It's really an interesting market because, as you said, we did get some helpful rains overnight here across a lot of the Midwest, in particular Illinois, Indiana, parts of Michigan, Ohio catching a little bit of rain. So well-timed, obviously, especially for the beans here as they go through pod fill. And it'll help though, a little bit on the corn in terms of during that grain fill period. We get a little kernel depth as we get into the month of August here. So we did see the market under a lot of pressure, as you said earlier today, new contract lows made. But coming back, as you said, off those lows and corn, maybe just a little end of the week profit taking, end user putting their toe in the water each time we make new lows to get some coverage on. So I think there's a more optimistic outlook for corn exports at the moment, given the world conditions, maybe a little smaller Ukraine crop, Argentina crop, as opposed to beans. Right now, China is not buying, albeit modest amounts of U.S. beans, but they're not buying near as many beans as they usually do. So we've got some profit taking here, a little bounce at the end of the week. I think in the wheat market, we've got a bounce here going on, Andy. They're not a good finish to the crop in Europe. And, of course, Europe grows soft wheat, as your listeners do here in the Midwest.
That is Brian Basting at Advanced Trading. Brian's number is 309-664-2314. Settlements now on Friday in the corn market, 4.5 cents down both September and December. SEP 370.5. December settles at 392.5. March corn contract 411 now, losing 4.75. In beans, September, 938.75, 12.75 down, 11.5 cents off on the November, 957, and January, 976, 11 cents down, up 1.75 on September wheat, 530, and the Dease contract, 552.5, gaining 2.25. Weak in the meats, October live cattle, 178.30 down 245, and October lean hogs, 75.07 down $1.42. There's the market update. Much more still to come. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Podcasts are everywhere today, but how do you find the one that has something you're really interested in? The Hoosier Ag Today podcast network is your one-stop shop for podcasts covering Indiana agriculture. farm policy, farm news, agronomy, soil health, ag biosciences, and more can all be found at the Hoosier Ag Today podcast network. Check it out on the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app and at HoosierAgToday.com.
A little bit of moisture followed by a stretch of dry weather. That's how your farm forecast is stacking up. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Indiana Farm Forecast, weekend edition. And as we take a look at the setup, we're going to be having to deal with the rain over the weekend, tiding us over until our next batch of moisture, and that's not going to be for a minute. Let's kind of recap, first of all, where we are. We had a significant area of precipitation develop later Thursday, overnight Thursday night through yesterday, Friday. Nice batches of moisture across a large part of the state. Here today, we're going to be dealing with wraparound backside precipitation as low pressure slowed to an absolute crawl last night and into this morning coming into the Great Lakes. This low will take almost an entire day to day and a half to get out of Michigan and move off to the east and northeast. Because of that, the wraparound chances for on-again, off-again showers today, tonight, and tomorrow. I don't think we're going to get blown away with additional moisture content, but we are going to be wet, or at least not dry super fast. I think the additional moisture that we can see today and tomorrow will be on the order of a tenth to maybe half an inch. Like I said, just not a lot, but it's around. Once we get to Monday, moisture's gone. Clouds are going to be breaking up overnight tomorrow night. Then we have put together quite the dry stretch. Monday through at least next Sunday, we are seeing absolutely no precipitation at all. Additionally, we see cool temperatures to start the week, or I should say pleasant temperatures. Not cool, pleasant temperatures to start the week. Humidity, okay. And by late week, we're going to be seeing a significant surge in temperatures. A massive heat dome in the southern plains is going to try and break loose. We see temperatures getting up into the upper 80s, flirting with 90 degrees in the northern plains, North Dakota, South Dakota, late next week. I don't think we see that same kind of surge here right now, but I am looking at warmer temperatures trying to push in here. But with no moisture, I think we're going to be drying things very, very quickly, and it won't be lost on me at all to hear some comments late next Thursday and Friday of, hey, we need a rain, or Ryan, when's our next rain? Those will be coming our direction. So let's take a look at the extended 11 to 16 day forecast window. I have us dry through most of the upcoming week as well. As a matter of fact, the next round of moisture that we see with any kind of teeth to it, good organization and a system, I think may not come until later on, like the 29th into the 30th. It just doesn't look like it has a lot of surge of moisture that's going to be coming before then. So if that's the case, that means that the entire second half of the month of August is going to be well below normal on precipitation. That's going to hasten dry down on crops that are headed that direction already, like some of that full dent corn we learned about a few weeks back. But we're also going to be sucking a little bit of potential out of some soybeans that are still growing. I'm Ryan Martin.
Farmers and agriculture dealers, now is the time to inspect your combines for holes and wear in your threshing, feeder, and grain tank sections. Instead of costly replacements, try combine wear parts from Eile Fabrications, made with the best steel, such as Hardox or Strengths wear plate. Eile's steel wear part liners are easy to install and built to OEM specs to ensure a snug and seamless fit at a cost less than OEM replacement parts. Visit IHLEFabrications.com and elevate your harvest this season.
Welcome back. Thanks for joining us online, on your phone, or on your radio. This is Hoosier Ag This Week from Hoosier Ag Today. I'm Eric Pfeiffer. Many, including this farm broadcaster, have been pretty down about the prospects of getting a farm bill completed this calendar year. Indiana Congressman Jim Baird, though, a Republican on the House Ag Committee, is still holding out hope.
I hope the Senate will have a change of heart, and maybe election and politics might have a factor in that, and in so doing they will present their version of the farm bill, and then we can reconcile that and get something done.
Baird joined me on the latest Indiana Ag Policy podcast, available now wherever you listen to podcasts. He reminds us the existing farm bill expires at the end of next month, so something will need to be done. An area of passion for Baird is research. The longer it takes to get a new farm bill done, the longer it will take for new dollars to make it to land-grant universities like Purdue to get those research dollars that are in it to make improvements for ag research.
You know, some of these facilities, the laboratories and so on, were built back in the 60s. So we want to make sure we can upgrade those facilities, that the young researchers that we can attract to the land grants, and Purdue University is a major factor in that. But if we can attract those young people by having the right kind of facilities and the instruments they need to conduct the very sophisticated research that they want to do now, then I think that's a real asset.
Baird recorded the podcast after receiving the Friend of Farmer Award from the Indiana Corn Growers Association and Indiana Soybean Alliance at their Shop Talk event in White County Friday. He says he's proud to represent agriculture on the House Ag Committee, and he loves coming home to visit farmers.
I think it's important to stay positive and take confidence in what agriculture is doing and the kind of foundation they provide for this country. And so take pride in that. I'm very proud of American agriculture, and I think those that are involved in it, and especially those from Indiana, should feel the same.
Baird has much more to say in the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, brought to you by the Indiana Corn Growers Association, Indiana Soybean Alliance, and also Beck's Hybrids and Indiana Farm Bureau. You can hear it now at HoosierAgToday.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. From one congressman in Indiana to one in Illinois, earlier this summer, John Deere said it was laying off more than 600 employees at production plants in Illinois and Iowa. The company also said it was moving some of its jobs from the U.S. to Mexico. C.J. Miller reports how that congressman in Illinois is quite upset with Deere's decisions.
You know, I'll tell you, I'm really frustrated today. I don't believe that Deere and Company is being forthcoming about their plans for the future.
And that's Illinois Congressman Eric Sorensen, who represents the district where John Deere's corporate headquarters are located. In spite of the layoffs, Sorensen points to the fact that John Deere generated more than $10 billion in profits in 2023, while the company's CEO, John May, received more than $26 million in total compensation last year alone.
I mean, there are challenges in the ag economy, but John Deere has been effective in making a profit for its shareholders. So looking forward, we have to understand that it is a profitable company. That's the thing that's concerning for me, because I don't believe that we're at the end of the Deere & Company's layoff period.
Sorensen says he's also concerned that if John Deere were to move more of its manufacturing to Mexico and overseas, that could have a crippling effect on the U.S. ag economy.
We need to know, where is the future of Deere & Company? And we need to know that the future of agriculture in our country has an American-made John Deere being a part of that.
Read more at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm C.J. Miller.
It's no secret. We have a demand problem right now for both corn and soybeans. With new crop corn prices hovering around the $4 mark and new crop soybeans under $10, farmers are having to make tough decisions in order to be profitable. Assistant Professor of Ag Finance at Purdue, Chad Fichter, joined us on the Purdue Crop Chat podcast with soybean Sean Castile and Dan Corn Quinn to discuss the current situation. He says some farmers might choose to plant more soybeans next year because losses on beans will be less than on corn, much like they were this year. But
I'm always thinking about that idea that, you know, as you're sitting in traffic and the lane beside you is going really fast and the lane that you're in is going really slow, and then everybody switches to the fast lane and everybody switches back, and then you basically just do this back and forth, and oftentimes you're just better off staying in the lane. Sometimes I wonder about that with crop plans. You know, you might have some short-term switching, but,
sure,
you know, as a farmer having that long-term view, unfortunately, you know, if you're farming, you might only have 50, 60 crops that you're going to grow, but trying to stay consistent, don't panic, you know, try to make sound decisions, knowing that you can't control the markets. You know, hopefully get some joy out of the fact you grew a big crop.
Sure.
And then, you know, live to fight again another day.
Yeah, so probably staving down the new iron envy that might be going on or anything like that might come to mind.
Yeah, I think you guys get your jobs cut out for you on how do we grow good crops with the least amount of inputs. That's probably going to be the conversation, right? It seems like we've had a phase of really kind of exploring and trying some new stuff and spending on fertility. You know, maybe this next year is a year where we say, hey, what's the least amount? Where can we hit that marginal revenue, marginal cost, where we're getting, getting back what we put in at least. Let's not go any further.
You can hear much more of that conversation between Fichter, Castile, and Dan Cornquinn in the Purdue Crop Chat now at HoosierAgToday.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Speaking of those soybeans, how do they look? Castile says these might be the most advanced soybeans for this time of year that he's ever seen.
Oh, this crop looks outstanding. We got a forecast of 62 bushels at the state level, and that breaks last year's record at 61. The crop itself, we got reports statewide about 68% good to excellent. And as you drive the state, they look tremendous. You get out, you look at the canopy, you pull it back, they're potted up well. We have a lot of beans that are planted in April and May, and those are just tremendous. They're potted well. They've got good node counts. I was out in the field last week and had 23 nodes, which is outstanding. Got good branching, so we're looking forward to a good crop.
There's much more to come here on the weekend show as we wrap up the Indiana State Fair. Some awards being given out. CJ Miller takes you the rest of the way here on Hoosier Ag This Week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
Share more about how you think about bridging those two halves of a whole, environmental sustainability, economic sustainability, as you think about the strategy of Elanco.
The environmental aspect is more and more important every day in their right to operate as producers. I think there's many perceptions out there about particularly cattle production that I think science can debate which way or another we should go. But I think if we want to operate in this space, we have to play a leading role in the environmental aspect of the industry operating. We can't just sit there and provide products and make money off products and not reinvest that back in the industry. And I think that's something that we've probably been pushed into a little bit, but something we've really embraced and we're quite excited and proud about.
Get more episodes online at agrinovusindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you again for joining us here on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today. As Indiana's ag leaders are pushing your state lawmakers to address the state's property tax issue in 2025, ag leaders from across the U.S. are pushing Congress to tackle federal tax issues.
Our family farms are already burdened by inflation, increased supply costs, and much, much more.
And that's Zippy Duvall, president of American Farm Bureau Federation. Many provisions in the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act are set to expire at the end of 2025. Duvall says that lawmakers must extend those provisions.
These new tax burdens could put even more pressure on our farmers and ranchers and may even force them out of business, including a key estate tax exemption.
And that estate tax provision is what allows farmers to transfer their farm operation to the next generation without heavy tax burdens. When the new Congress is sworn in early next January, that's when Farm Bureau wants lawmakers to focus on tax reform.
It's important that we work with lawmakers now so that they understand how current tax provisions enables our farmers to remain in business and protect their farms so that they can afford to pass them on to the next generation. Lawmakers must understand that there are real consequences to not renewing important provisions like the estate tax exemption.
Read more at HoosierAgToday.com and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app. Over 100 families were honored this past Wednesday at the Indiana State Fair for their long-standing commitment to agriculture. It was at the Hoosier Homestead Awards Ceremony hosted by the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. Eric Pfeiffer is back with more.
To be named a Hoosier Homestead, farms must be owned by the same family for more than 100 consecutive years.
It means a legacy, and it also means responsibility to keep the legacy going.
That's J.W. Holmes, who received the Bicentennial Award for 200 years of continuous ownership of his family's farm in Tippecanoe County.
We try to manage the place for the next generation is how we think of it. You know, we don't really think of it as the current generations as much as the next, and making sure that it's in a place where it can continue moving forward.
J.W. is the seventh generation on the family farm. He gave me some of the history.
The farm itself started in 1824. My great-great-great-great-granddad came after buying land in Virginia and settled here in Tippecanoe County about 5 years before it was Tippecanoe County. And he was still dealing with the natives, you know, after the Battle of Tippecanoe, they were still around. and he was a land surveyor, so he surveyed a lot of the land that people see around Tippecanoe County. He was the first one to do a lot of that.
JW told me he really wished that more of his family was still alive to see this feat. They would certainly be proud. You can see the list of other proud Hoosier homesteads by finding this story at HoosierAgToday.com. Congratulations to all of them. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
And speaking of awards, of course, it's an amazing achievement to be recognized by your peers with an award. But for one Indiana ag leader, she's received two different recognitions over the course of the past 2 weeks out of the Indiana State Fair.
My love is just serving people, and I'm very blessed to have been part of this my entire career.
And that's Julia Wickard, Indiana's executive director of the USDA Farm Service Agency. During the first week of the Indiana State Fair, she received the 2024 Women in Agriculture Leadership Award from Purdue Extension. This past week, Wickard was surprised by her team when they told her they had nominated her for the FSA's Administrator's Award for Service to Agriculture.
When I think about awards, I think about the people that I've served and served with over my career. You know, whether it's now with the Indiana USDA Farm Service Agency or the numerous commodity organizations and farm groups in this state, it's about getting the work done, doing it for farmers, doing it for our stakeholders and our partners, and ultimately making a difference.
Wickard says her connection with Indiana's farm community goes far beyond serving in a leadership role with FSA.
I get up every day, I go to the barn, feed the animals, go to work in it every day, I come home to it every night. And I do it because I love agriculture, I love the state, I love serving the American farmer, and that's why I do what I do.
She adds that the advice that she gives out is the same advice that was once given to her early in her career.
Never say never to an opportunity. Yeah, at least walk through the door and see what's on the other side. You may not think that that job is something that you'd find interest in, but probably what you'll find is you're going to learn something from that experience. You're going to take something from it that's going to make you a more well-rounded, better person. Take advantage of every opportunity that's in front of you.
You can hear more from Julia Wickard at HoosierAgToday.com. And with that, we turn out the lights for another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. If you missed any part of today's show, you can download the podcast version at HoosierAgToday.com. Also, make sure to download the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app. It's a free download for iPhone and Android. And don't forget to swing back by the Indiana State Fair before they close it down, coming up on Sunday night. For Eric Pfeiffer, Andy Eubank, and Hoosier Ag Today's chief meteorologist, Ryan Martin, I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.